It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. I've been waiting until I felt the time was right to talk about the topic of mental health, and in particular, how it involves young and amateur athletes, and what we need to keep in mind as sports parents, as coaches, and as educators. Now, clearly, over the last few years, there's been a lot of discussion in the media about mental health of our athletes, most notably tennis star Naomi Osaka, gymnast Simone Biles, and former major leaguer Drew Robinson, who tried to kill himself with a gunshot to his head. And if you don't know the Robinson story, let me give you a very brief recap. Drew Robinson was drafted by the Texas Rangers in the fourth round out of high school in 2010. Terrific, terrific prospect, great high school player. He signed with the Rangers, but he struggled in the minors. He made progress, but did so slowly. But yes, he finally got to the big leagues for, as I say, a cup of coffee. But his path wasn't easy. His career was, well, I have to say, somewhat typical for most minor leaguers. He was always being called up and then sent down back to the minors. But by his own admission, for a guy who had pretty serious expectations of perfection in his baseball career, his ups and downs along the way really began to eat at his sense of self-confidence. And sure enough, on April 16th, 2020, Robinson tried to kill himself. He shot himself in the head, and that resulted in the loss of a sense of smell and taste, and more importantly, of his right eye. These days, Drew Robinson is now using his platform as a former major leaguer and his experiences of struggles with mental health, and he's working to basically get the word out to younger athletes about knowing how to communicate when they have issues. This is the kind of extreme example that we're talking about these days with mental health in our kids. And let's be honest, in our world over the last several years, our children have had to grow up thinking about whether they might get COVID and die, or worry about being shot in a school classroom by a crazed gunman, or whether they've lost an important year or two of their schooling due to having to learn remotely from home. And of course, there are countless other pressures that our kids have had to live with. Now, before we get into this discussion, I want to make sure we're all on the same page in terms of our definitions. In sports, all athletes focus on the pressures to perform, to succeed, to play at their very best level. And those pressures do make up the world of sports psychology. That particular domain of psychology, that of sports psychology, well, you've heard me say this before, that's a relatively new domain, just in the last 30 years or so. When I was growing up and I was in college, I can assure you there was very, very little research into this field. Nowadays, of course, sports psychology is thankfully widely accepted and embraced, not just in this country, but all over the world. But that was not always the case. I hearken back to when I was in high school and college several decades ago, and trust me, there was no sports psychologist to talk to. And even if there were, well, I would have been too embarrassed to admit to an outsider that I had real concerns. It just wasn't done. It would have been seen as an overt sign of weakness. And as an athlete with aspirations, you would have been labeled as an outsider. So that's sports psychology. In terms of mental health, while that term can and often does intersect with the pressures of sports psych, most of the mental health issues are not so directly involved with how the athlete does. That is, a youngster may become so deeply troubled and tangled up with their emotions that they begin to lose perspective on what they truly love in life. Someone once observed that when you're so deeply depressed, it's as though your entire world has become basically upside down, that you see things that normally bring you happiness now bring you a sense of despair. And again, everybody is different. Everybody has good days and bad days, but clearly, when a young person can't seem to bounce back due to a raft of ongoing negative thoughts, it is absolutely essential that there are trained counselors, psychologists, social workers, educators, anybody who can help be easily accessed by the athlete. And these people need to be available to that youngster 24/7. Let me give an example. Some 30 years ago, when I was hired by the Cleveland Indians as their first roving sports psychology coach, I made it clear that my focus was to really work primarily on performance issues. But I also recognized that sometimes the issues were much deeper and more worrisome than whether a guy couldn't get out of a batting slump. And as such, when I joined the Indians, I made sure that when a player or even a coach came to me, if it was clear that the person needed some help beyond my scope, it could be an issue regarding substance abuse, marital issues, gambling problems, even depression, I made absolutely sure that they knew how to contact the ball club's employee assistance program to secure immediate help for the ball player. And it was all done, of course, in total confidence. Now, back then, that was all sort of radically new. It was different. There were very, very few professional baseball organizations that had that kind of sort of conduit where if a player had real problems and didn't know where to turn, at least with me, with the Indians, I could get them into the right contacts in terms of getting help. Not so much about baseball issues, but issues off the field affecting their total psyche. Now, these days, of course, the good news is that certainly at both the professional and the collegiate level, it's the rare program that doesn't offer these kinds of services to their athletes. In fact, there was a piece this past week on the Today Show about Nick Saban and the University of Alabama and how they have a full and complete staff at their college to help and assist their athletes, not just the football players, but athletes in all their sports, Alabama. It's pretty clear that their staff was focused on the immense pressures that these college youngsters faced, such as dealing with parental expectations to succeed or to get to the NFL or even, I assume, to just get more playing time in the games. And, of course, dealing with the kind of ferocious competition that a football program in Alabama has. Friends, I want to talk about this today, and I'm at 877-337-6666. Again, we know about mental health. It is out there. It's a concern. It's bigger and more of a concern than ever before. And remember, let's understand this. The hard truth is that a lot of the frustration and the low sense of self-esteem in teenagers, well, it all comes from either feeling that I'm letting my parents down, or maybe I'm just not as good an athlete as I thought I was, or that there's just so many demands on my life in terms of having to go to class, homework, practices, term papers, deadlines, and so on, that these youngsters, they just don't know where to turn for help. These feelings of inadequacy can very quickly spiral out of control, especially if the youngster tends to be, well, let's call it perfectionistic regarding their goals in life. And they've already had a great deal of success in their middle school and high school years. Maybe they feel they have a huge need to always not just be a top student, but they get straight A's. And they need to be the absolute best in their sports competitions. That they absolutely need to make the all-county team. They need to make that elite club team and to get attention from top college coaches and so on and so forth. You know what I'm talking about. As such, when a youngster is suddenly confronted with a hard and unexpected turn, they may not have enough of a psychological cushion to fall fall back on and rebound. That is, if all you've ever experienced is total and great success, being confronted with unexpected adversity can be truly devastating to one's psyche. And the youngster may not know how to cope or who to turn to, or even if they should turn to anyone. This is why the ongoing conversation about mental health issues with our athletes and why it is so vitally important. And, of course, as I said, I welcome your thoughts and comments this morning on this key topic at 877-337-6666. I'm eager to share your thoughts and comments, and most importantly, to provide some real practical insights as to what sports parents and coaches need to know and need to do when it gets to getting their kids to talk about their innermost concerns. Back with your calls right after this timeout.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking about the topic of mental health in our kids and our athletes. You know, look, athletes have always had to deal with pressures, expectations, adversity, disappointment, and so on. And in our society, we, of course, always celebrate the winners. But the truth is, we don't really pay much attention to those who compete and those who lose. And as a parent, as a coach, as an adult, you really need to be constantly on the lookout for your youngster's mental health. And that's not always easy. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show, we've heard, of course, about the performance issues regarding Simone Biles and the mental struggles that Naomi Osaka has had when it comes to dealing with the media after her tennis matches. But the problem is, those are well-publicized cases. We have to be just as concerned with those athletes who aren't necessarily well-known stars, the ones who are still struggling to find their way. Katie Meyer, the outstanding goalkeeper for the Stanford University women's soccer team, she died by suicide earlier this year, and by all accounts, she was a top goalie. She was, at least by all accounts, theoretically on top of the world, but there was no indication that she would take such a drastic action. Even her parents said that she seemed to be in very good spirits the same morning that she died. But again, we know that depression is a very, very devastating disease. Katie Meyer's mother observed, quote, "There's so much pressure, I think, on athletes, especially at that high level, balancing academics and a high competitive environment." And she added, "There is anxiety and there is stress to be perfect, to be the best, to be number one." And that overwhelming pressure to always need to be perfect, to be the best, to be number one, that's a theme that keeps popping up all the time with our young athletes. And as parents, we really need to be able to cushion our kids' expectations in sports. That winning is great, of course, but winning isn't all that matters in life and in competing. We really need to do our part as parents to help educate and teach our kids about how to cope when they are confronted with setbacks and with failure. And the fact is, we need to know how to do that. And sadly, there are so many athletes I mentioned before that we haven't heard of necessarily because they aren't big-name stars. But just this past year alone, Sarah Schultz, a runner from the University of Wisconsin, committed suicide. Jaden Hill, she was on the track and field team at Northern Michigan University. Robert Martin, a top lacrosse goalie at Binghamton. Lauren Burnett, star softball player from James Madison. They all died. They all took their lives during March and April of this year. So again, these are athletes who, from the outside looking in, they all seem to have everything going for them. But away from the field, they obviously struggle with mental health issues that no one knew about. And again, us, our jobs as parents is to understand how to connect and how to get the word out. Because for whatever reason, either they didn't know, these kids didn't know who to turn to for help, or they felt that they couldn't. Whatever the reason, they just couldn't overcome their personal struggles. Now again, I remember for years and years, as I mentioned, going to seek help from a counselor or a social worker or a psychologist was seen by athletes as a kind of personal weakness. hopefully we are finally making progress to change all that. Parents, coaches, it's really become more important than ever that you not just have a line of communication with these athletes, but that you often take the time to make sure they are doing okay, not just in terms of their sport, but they are not being overwhelmed by having placed too many demands on their life and their psyche. You need to be able to communicate with these youngsters on their level. They need to accept you and your concerns. All right, on that note, let's take some calls about this. Let's start the conversation, this very important conversation this morning. Let's go over to Ed Ward over in New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
I'm okay, Ed.
Yes, this is a topic that's very important. And a lot of it, Rick, has to do with, I feel that the parents have very high expectations in their children as athletes. And if they don't meet those expectations, they're like, the parents like to put blame on that. Like, for example, I coach travel baseball. And one of the things is, you know, I handle in the organization I'm with, handling what level of college sports that they could play.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is, if I tell them that they're not a D1 player, parents look at me saying, and one of them said to me one time, well, you're downgrading my kid's level. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I've been in this a long time. I feel I have a good sense of evaluation what level your son plays at. And, you know, and I really feel it's the parents. And the thing is, when I tell players what level they can play at, that they're very appreciative because they like to be told the honest thing.
Yep.
And then when you try to help them get in the school at the level that you feel that they belong at, they're very appreciative. And if it works out, they thank you in the long run.
You know, Ed, that's sort of the crux of the situation, that sort of microcosm, as you said. You know, the parental expectations. If a kid is thinking, well, I just want to find a place, I want somebody to tell me the truth as to where they think I may be able to play, at what level, if I even play in college, if I'm good enough to even play at a D3 program or a JUCO. But when the parents come to you or an instructor or a scout and say, wait a minute, my kid's going to be a D1 scholarship player. And the truth is that, no, the kid might be good enough to play the D3 level, but D1 would be a mistake. Suddenly, there's a real conflict. And usually, more often than not, it's the parent who then basically takes out his frustrations on their son as to why they aren't good enough to play D1. And that's where kids begin to you know, look at this and say, wait a minute, I can't win here. I'm busting my butt to do the best I can, but somehow I'm not going to be able to live up to my parents' expectations. That's a real problem.
One last thing, Rick, and I know you got a lot of calls. I try to tell parents, don't go spending your retirement money on all these showcases or whatever. I try to advise them, pick out the select ones, especially if it's a college that I've advised you the level you could play at to see if they run stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes parents still don't listen, and they still want to spend the money. Hopefully that someone will see them and get the level that the parent thinks that they could play at.
I hear you loud and clear. Ed, thank you for your comments this morning. And just again to echo what Ed had just mentioned, again, we're talking about parental expectations. And I understand that if you're a mom or dad and you've seen your kid be a star, you know, from the time they were 6, 7, 8 years old, whatever sport it may be, baseball, softball, you know, basketball, lacrosse, whatever, but you've seen them develop in their community and clearly they're a talented athlete. You have to at some point take on the role of being a grown-up, an adult, and say, I got to be careful here because if I put on too much expectations, because clearly my son or my daughter is obviously watching how I react on the sidelines during the course of their games. If I put too much expectation on them and they don't somehow live up to those so-called high, lofty expectations, then I'm in effect becoming an enabler and putting a lot of unnecessary stress and pressure on that kid, and the kid may not know how to cope with that. And that's what I worry about in all these situations. We always hear these parents say, they didn't know what was going on. They weren't communicating well or directly with their youngster, and that's what I'm telling you need to do. You need to have this conversation with your kid about expectations and doing their best and finding their own level of ability. and that you're pleased as their mom or their dad as to how well they do, regardless of the outcome. And that's a critically important life lesson. And you also have to make it clear to them, if they do want to talk to somebody, there are various avenues or vehicles in which they can do that. And I'll get to some suggestions on that in a little bit. But let's continue with our calls. I am eager to hear from Jack Smithland this morning about this topic, because Jack has spent 40 years as a coach and educator, and obviously has seen the old days when you know, kids were not didn't think about talking to anybody when they were depressed. And nowadays, of course, we've done a 180, and it's open. Kids are allowed to talk to anybody they can if they're having troubles. Jack, good morning.
How are you, Rick? I was just talking to Ed Zuman, and you know what? I'm sitting up here in Maine. I snuck out of the hotel where we're in a bed and breakfast.
Yep.
And you know, I did a lot of thinking about this over the past couple of days. But you know, one of the things that we have to understand is that we as parents put the most pressure. We do communicate, but most of us don't communicate in the proper manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we put those pressures on those kids, and you know, and they're trying to succeed for themselves, and they're also trying to succeed for you and your team and everybody else. And one of the things that we have to do as coaches, as teachers, as mentors, is we have to build the trust in these kids so that we know that if they have a problem, they feel comfortable enough to come to you. And once again, like I just said, build trust. Trust isn't given. It isn't just given out. So you got to build a relationship with these kids so that they understand that you are there for them every single day. Every single day that I'm at practice with my team, I tell my kids, we are here for you. If you have a problem, remember, there's no guilt or bad, anything bad about ever asking questions and asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids today, the young kids that we're talking about, you know, and I've talked about this many times, the prefrontal lobe of your brain isn't developed until you're in your probably early to mid-20s. And they don't have the ability to sit and rationalize and to sit and figure out how to deal with things. We as parents, we as adults, we as coaches and teachers do. So we have to do, some of the times we have to do that thinking for them. But if they're not comfortable enough to come to you, you'll never get to them.
Correct.
So you have to build a trust in them, and you have to let them know and support them. You know, like you used to talk about, you know, after a game, after they failed, they made a mistake that maybe caught, you know, you're on them before they even get in the car. You can't do that anymore. You have to let them sit and think and be there for them when they are thinking. You know, we at New Jersey City University just did something that I think is probably one of the best things that the athletic department ever did. They just went out and hired two professional sports psychologists, a male and a female. And I'm going to tell you, out of our 22, 24 girls on the roster, more than half of them use those two sports psychologists on a regular basis. Just to BS, just to talk about things that will make them feel better about themselves. And that's what we need to do as educators and as teachers and coaches and parents.
Yeah.
Parents, you put the most pressure on your kids. You're the ones that are causing your kids to want to succeed at every cost. Lay back. Let them have fun. You know, I say every day to my kids, if you're not having fun, go find something else to do. Really, there is no sense in doing something that you're not feeling good about. You know, Rick, this is a great, great topic. And, you know, you being a sports psychologist, I'm so glad that you're the one who brought this up. And I don't know of any other radio stations that do anything that you do. So, you know, I think it's just such a great thing. And, you know, the point is that Ed hit it right on the part. You know, when you tell a kid, oh, you're not a D1 player, you know, the parents leave you. They go find another club.
Yes.
That's gonna, you know, praise their kids. And there's nothing wrong with praising them. But there's a truth to being honest with them. There's a part about making them understand what the reality is in life. Life is all about obstacles.
And
baseball and softball, I'm telling you, in baseball and softball, you're not going to find more obstacles in your life in any other sport. You're going to fail often.
Yeah,
and you better be able to deal with it.
Jack, I just, you know, two points I want to make. First of all is that, what parents don't seem to understand is that when a kid is 16, 17, 18 years old, that they understand that what their own abilities are because they've been out there competing against their peers and so on and so forth. So they may say to themselves, I've come to peace with the fact that they're not going to be a Division I scholarship athlete. But the parent still thinks that the kid is. And that's sort of like that cognitive dissonance between the kid's expectation and the parent's expectation, that really causes a real chasm or potential chasm to you know, evolve. And that's, as you said, if a parent doesn't hear that a scout is telling them that their kid is a Division I athlete, the father or mother will say, oh, I'll take my kid someplace else where somebody will say he's D1 or she's D1. That's a problem. And the other thing you said, Jack, which I want to underscore, is that it's all about trust. And trust is you have to build that. It's not a given. It has to be constructed and built upon. It takes time. And let me give you a true story from my own past. When I was hired by the Cleveland Indians as their sports psychology coach, I got some really fundamental and key advice. And surprising advice, quite frankly, from my mentor, Harvey Dorfman, who is considered the pioneer of all sports psychology, at least in the worlds of baseball. And he said to me, Harvey said, Rick, if you want to really connect and be accepted by these major leaguers, mind you, this is in the early 1990s, where, again, ball players in those days, they were wary of outsiders. Anyhow, so Harvey said, if you want to connect and be fully accepted by these major leaguers who don't know who you are, well, you're going to need to wear the uniform of the Indians and be on the field in spring training, be in the dugout before the games, and most importantly, throw batting practice to these guys, hit fungos. Let these fellows know, who are going to be wary of you at the start, but let them know by letting them observe you that you're one of them, that you too know what it's like to have played baseball, what it's like to fail, to be disappointed when things don't go your way. And I thought that was just superb advice from Dorfman, because the players who had been somewhat skittish to talk to me at the start about their inner concerns and worries, gradually they began to trust me and to have faith in me and would talk to me. Again, that's the value of communication. That's what we're talking about here. That's the key. You have to be, as a sports parent, you have to be communicating with your youngster. And coaches, the same with you. As Jack had just said, he every day tells his softball players at New Jersey City University, we're here for you to talk about anything you want to talk about. And coaches, you need to be even more aware and attentive than ever before to your athletes. And if your youngster does come to you, whether you're a parent or a coach, educator, you just got to stop what you're doing immediately and let your youngster talk. And you listen. You do not interrupt them. If they are perhaps too upset to articulate what's bothering them, well, then fine. Then you just give them some time to gain their composure, and you immediately try to find an individual that athlete would be comfortable talking with. And you got to do that right away. Again, if you don't have any such individual to turn to, well, you go online and you can find any number of outlets to help your son or daughter or your athlete to find somebody to talk to. And I'll give you some numbers and outlets after the break. But again, I can't emphasize enough how important this topic is. Obviously, I want to get some more calls and thoughts about this at 877-337-66. When I return, I'll give you some more resources that are important to jot down so you have them. But again, let's talk about this some more. Stay with me. I do want to pause for a moment this morning and pay tribute to today being the 21st anniversary of 9/11/2001. And for those of you who were alive and personally recall that fateful, tragic, and horrible day, please take a private moment this morning to reflect on what happened when the United States was under attack from terrorists. Now, every one of us has our own personal memories of 9/11, but for me, one of the better and more positive memories of that awful day was how all of us came together and we all united as a nation. No one cared about politics, whether we were Republicans or Democrats. All that mattered was that we were all Americans. And as such, we really did put aside our political differences and banded as a full and able-bodied nation to stand together and to do the right thing for all of us. So the positive aftermath of that god-awful morning was, well, pretty singular and pretty impressive. The United States of America was never more united. And that's what I recall vividly, the united part. And I hope you do as well. Okay, we're talking this morning about mental health and our athletes and what we need to know to empower ourselves as parents and as coaches, as teachers, educators. And I promised you before the break, I'd give you a couple of outlets. And of course, you can go, there are any number of psychological outreach services you can find very quickly online. But, here are a couple of ones you should try to jot down and basically keep in the front of your head. For starters, 988 is a real good number to remember. Just make it part of your memory bank. That's a quick number you can call, just like 911. 988's been around for a few months now. If you need somebody with psychological concerns, worries, whatever it might be, or you give it to your athlete, just say, call 988, and they'll connect you right away to get you the kid to talk to a counselor. Then there's also the United States National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number is 800-273-TALK. TALK. The number is 800-273-8255. Again, you can call that number anytime, day or night, if you need somebody to reach out to. Again, the United States, the U.S. National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-TALK. There are also other ways, thank goodness, for athletes to reach out for help with their mental health concerns and issues. And one of the more popular ones is called The Zone. And right now, it's catching. The Zone is catching on primarily with colleges and their athletes. It's basically a very easy-to-use app that allows the individual to track their own mental state on an everyday basis. It also provides various ways to get help if things start to feel overwhelming. It was started by a bunch of former college student athletes. And for more information, all you have to do is go to itsthezone.com. Again, itsthezone.com. It's a pretty cool app. All right. I also want to mention on a lighter note, at least I think it's a lighter note, this is a new one from the Sports Edge Police Blotter. And again, we'll get to your calls again at 877-337-6666. But this came out of Houston last week, and it was a real head-scratcher. The mom of a youth football player, well, she was arrested last week, accused of chasing after a 12-year-old during a Little League football game and threatening to basically slap that 12-year-old. Why, you ask, was the mom upset? Well, the witnesses say the woman was angry because the 12-year-old tackled her child during the course of the game. And there's a video of this episode online. The mom is clearly chasing after this young tackler on the field during the course of the game. And even, she was fined $200 for her overprotective ways, and she and her son were both banned from the league. And the league itself was fined $500 for not keeping this mom under control during the course of this tackle football game. Now, the woman never really ever caught up or never really touched the kid, but the victim's mom said it was pretty upsetting to have someone who was a grown-up threatening her son and chasing him, shouting profanities over what should have been a fun football game. I mean, did this mom not understand this was tackle football and that if her son carries the ball, then he's going to get tackled by a kid in the other team? Ay, ay, ay. I mean, this is really weird stuff. But again, this was all well documented out of Houston. One other quick note, by the way, we are now definitely beginning to see a steady decline in the number of high school sports refs and officials. It's really now having a direct impact on local high school games. We knew this was coming. There just aren't enough refs, officials, umpires to work all of our kids' high school games. High school football games are now being postponed more and more because there just aren't enough available refs to work the games. And we knew this was happening, mostly because the older referees are now beginning to step down and retire, but there are just fewer and fewer new referees and officials to join the ranks. Why? Why is it hard to find new refs? Well, we've talked about the concerns about abusive parents at these high school games, and that's a major reason as to why becoming a ref has become less than attractive in recent years. And even more sobering, it's not really clear if there is any solution to this downward trend with fewer refs. And let's face it, friends, without any refs or umpires or officials, our kids' games basically are just scrimmages. And that's not satisfactory for anyone. Okay, let's get back to our topic, our serious topic this morning about what's happening with kids and mental health. Let's go to Michael in Manhattan. Michael, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. And let me just first say, because I always think about him, I wish your dad was around to still do play-by-play. he could really capture the dramatic without over hyperbole. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. My dad was a real craftsman, took great pride in what he did, and clearly he really tried to pick and choose those moments that really needed to be emphasized and become more dramatic. But for the most part, he really worked hard at making the game to be entertaining. He was a journalist. He didn't take sides. He didn't root for one team or another. He was basically, as I said, took great pride in being a top-flight journalist covering sports for, 70-some-odd years.
I know. Such a clear voice, too.
Yeah.
And Rick, so this happened decades ago, and it's hard for me still. It's a story about, your topic. I played for Stevenson High School in the Bronx and basketball, and we won a championship. We played at Madison Square Garden. This was decades ago. I was a good star in high school. Then I went to Columbia, played for the varsity, started 1 year. I played freshman, then sophomore, and started, averaged 11.
Mm-hmm.
And points and led them in rebounding that year.
Mm-hmm.
But with about 6 or 7 rebounds. But Rick, after sophomore year, I couldn't take it anymore because of the pressure to become great, be of my family. My mother, I loved, the person I looked up to, but it was just too much. I felt pressure. And I started brawling on the court. I got into a lot of fights because of the anxiety. You know, it was like I didn't want anyone to take it away from me. And I thought every time something came up, it was like, I couldn't deal with it so much. So it turned into brawling and fighting. And I got into several fights. I played against some great players. They went on to the NBA. But the tension inside of me to succeed from not just my mother, but I had a lot of support from high school teachers who thought I was going to be really great.
Mm-hmm.
And my extended family as well, uncles who came from New Jersey. And I don't know, Rick, I still haven't gotten over it, the disappointment. I feel like I let everyone down. I went on after that to become a teacher, and literature is my love now, Shakespeare and stuff like that. And I had a great daughter afterwards. But, I still sometimes think, well, did I let my mother down?
How long ago were you in high school? How many years?
Excuse me?
How long ago were you in high school?
Rick, I'm going to admit it. It was the 70s.
Okay, so we're talking a few decades ago, and this memory still bothers you that perhaps you let your mom and let the teachers down, that somehow you didn't go on to play, in the NBA.
Rick, like my mother had her heart set on me. She was a great Mets fan. She watched every Mets game on TV. And then when I became excelled, I played baseball first, Babe Ruth League and all that, but basketball became my passion. And she was dead set on me. Her investment money-wise in Columbia and my high school experience where we won the championship, she was dead set on me becoming, a pro.
Did you ever have a conversation with her about, you know, Mom, I really love this, but you understand that I'm good, I'm really good, but I'm not sure I'm going to go on to play at the professional elite level. Did you ever have a or you ever have that kind of heart-to-heart with her?
Rick, they didn't understand back then.
I understand.
They thought it was something wrong with me.
Yes.
You know, why am I punking out?
Yeah.
Why can't I do it? Why can't I take it? The pressure, you know?
That's exactly, and I'm so glad you put it, framed it that way, because for youngsters today who don't understand why couldn't these lines of communication be established back in the day, that's exactly what we're talking about. As I said before, for a kid who was obviously a top athlete, to go to one's parent or to one's coach and say, you know, I really love this and I practice hard and work hard at it, but I'm not sure I'm going to end up being a superstar. And that the parent or the coach would say, well, you just have to work harder. It's as simple as that. Or they worry about the fact that maybe you were becoming mentally, unbalanced. I mean, it was just not done. It was a sign of weakness. So I hear you loud and clear on that. Michael, thank you for sharing that story this morning. I think it really helps to enlighten and illustrate exactly what we're talking about. And again, you know, we all know about the fact that, there is a sort of a maxim in sports that you want, if your dreams aren't big enough as an athlete, they should be big enough that they sort of intimidate you because they're beyond your means, and they try to, if they don't scare you if they're not big enough. Yeah, but the problem is if you go too far with your dreams and there's nobody to talk to, or nobody to express your hesitations, your worries, your concerns, that's when those dreams can come back to bite you. And as Michael just talked about, it can be a real problem if the parents aren't in sync with the athlete as to what the realistic expectations are, and that youngster has a safety net in place where they know they can go to, if they can't go to their parents, they can go to their coaches, or they can go to a favorite teacher, or they can go to a friend, but somebody somewhere where they can basically have a chance to really speak their truth about what they're going through and to try and get some help. Let's continue our conversation. Let's go to Dr. Rob Fried, who's been waiting patiently. Rob, good morning. I'm curious to get your thoughts about this.
You know, Rick, that was a special quote that gentleman Michael just called, because he's a guy probably, if he's from the 70s, in his 60s, I'm guessing,
yep,
for sure. And it still bothers him.
Yes.
And obviously was a great athlete. And this is what we're talking about. And also, I think we should take a look back at 9/11 today. I mean, it was right around now, kind of when it was happening. And it's for such a somber day, a very, very important topic that you're bringing up. And I was doing some thinking about this because, you know, when I thought about Simone Biles, she kind of like recently brought it, you know, to the forefront, the Olympian who, you know, had to basically drop out of a few events, and they said, why? And she was at the top of the game and was the best. I mean, she, you know, in her sport, Michael Phelps, another one, you know, depression, who was probably the greatest Olympic swimmer of all time. Taylor Hooton, was on this show, on this station many times. His kid took steroids and took his life. Depression is out there. Sadly, the pressures that go with young adults in all walks of life. I mean, I'm even thinking of my neighbor in Great Neck. And it's a little different, but it's similar, okay? Not on the sports level. The parents are so involved with their kids, even on the academic level. It's so important for the kids to go to an Ivy League school, go to a Michigan, a Stanford. They take more pride than I think that the kids do. It's almost like a status issue.
Yes.
And that's the pressure of these kids, you know, going to even in the education, to get into a top school academically. As parents and I think as coaches, thankfully, you bringing this out to the forefront. This is what you went to school for, and I think parents put so much pressure on kids. I mean, I was blessed. My dad, who was an athletic director, a coach, and the previous call, Michael, he coached for Midwood at Madison Square Garden in championship games. People don't realize that the PSAL ran their championship games in the Garden. I mean, and they still might even do that. But my dad, it's like I think your dad, I read your dad's memoirs. He never, ever pushed me. in anything. You know, he basically, I did it on my own. I looked up to him because of his background, playing for the football, you know, he was a minor league baseball player for the Giants after the war. And I got he was my role model. And I think parents should take a step back and always have an open channels to their kids, you know, because I think that there's a lot of this going on, the stresses of general life going on now as young adults, and, you know, parents pushing their kids. And I think Ed brought it. Jack, this is something I'm glad you brought up today. And Life's Tools, you know, Rick, is your show. And sports are wonderful, but the bottom line is they're just sports. And open communication, kids, the parents should look for certain things that maybe kids are showing that might mean they're troubled, you know, in situations. And I'm glad you brought this topic up. And I love your show, and I loved contributing.
Well, Rob, thank you. I do think this is the reason why I wanted to take my time and put this show together in a certain very deliberate way, and obviously 9/11 being a very somber day to remember what happened to our country 21 years ago. I did want to make sure it was done the right way. And again, I thank you for your thoughts. You know, this is where we are. And as all the callers have said today and did so in a very, very eloquent way, you know, we have to look, we all want the very best for our kids. We get that. But sometimes we have to make sure that we haven't crossed the line. We haven't crossed that boundary where we are, in fact, living vicariously through our kids, that perhaps we didn't have our own athletic dreams take us to the heights, but maybe we can work with our youngster to get them to where we fell short. And when you do that, when you start sort of expressing that in so many ways, either verbally or non-verbally to your youngster, they pick up on those cues, and all of a sudden they begin to say, well, I really want to please mom and dad and get to the next level, but, you know, the fact is I'm working hard in school, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. It gets to be overwhelming, particularly if suddenly the kid doesn't have the same kind of success at, let's say, age 15 or 16 as they did when they were 9 or 10. And that's just the nature of sports. And as Rob Fried just said, it's just sports. It's supposed to be about fun. And that's the bottom line. So again, friends, if you're in a situation where you are concerned, you want to make sure you're able to talk honestly with your son or daughter about their pressures in their life and obviously with sports and how they're handling them. Again, you can always go to 988, make that quick call, or go to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-TALK, or go find the app called The Zone. You can find that at itsthezone.com. Okay. That's going to do it and for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks to the Zoo Man, Ed R. Zooman, as always. And now we're into the NFL season. Stay tuned for the NFL preview. I'll see you next Sunday morning at 7 a.m. right here on Rick Wolf's Sports Edge.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.